You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
We got some built-in stuff here, so we're going to do some takeaways regarding the Seahawks and what we saw last night. It wasn't pretty, obviously, but we'll try to find some uplifting moments in there. And then need to know here in 15 minutes, and I promise 8:30, some baseball talk. I'm so pumped about Robbie Ray. I'm going to show you some numbers and some comps here on Robbie Ray that are kind of going to blow your mind. Brock asked a good question. Why weren't we talking more about him? I don't know. And it's on me. I take full. You want me to take an L?
Yeah.
I'll take an L for that. I should have been talking much more about Robbie Ray, just given who he is and the fact that they were able to go and get him. I don't know why.
Loser! You're a loser!
Yeah.
There you go.
No one had linked him with the Mariners.
Yeah, I just didn't think that it was going to be a. I didn't think it was going to be a thing for that. I don't know. I didn't see them going and spending. I never thought Jerry would spend that much on a pitcher. I thought Jerry would trade for pitching and sign hitting. And he went out and signed a big-time pitcher and managed to do it in a way that he doesn't get stuck with a bunch of worthless years at the end. I give Jerry a lot of credit. Right now, let's give you some takeaways from last night.
Takeaways.
All right, let's start with the most important takeaway of the game. More, I know you're going to like this one. J.D. McKissic, when he was here, he's listed as 5'10", 195. When he was here wearing number 21, he looked smaller than that. I would have said, if you had asked me, little J.D. McKissic running routes out of the backfield, little scat back, I would have said like 5'8", 185, something like that. You put him in D.C., you put him in that maroon uniform, you throw number 41 on his chest.
Wait, so 21 to 41.
Here.
Yeah.
Makes him look a different size.
If you asked me now, if you just showed him to me in a vacuum, I'd be like, 6 feet, 210.
No.
Whereas before, I would have said like 5'8", 185.
Between a 2 and a 4
does not.
Because they end in the same number.
Yeah. But 41 is like a fullback number. It's big, physical.
That is.
21's a scat back.
That's ludicrous.
Yeah, you're a nerd.
What are you talking? I can't believe I'm surrounded by people who don't see this way. J.D. McKissic looks like a different back. And oh, by the way, he looked pretty darn good last night against the Seahawks. A couple touchdowns. All right. That's one. Let's move it along before we have to talk more about him.
Takeaways.
All right, the numbers show that Russell was 20 of 31 last night and threw for, what, almost 250 yards, a couple touchdowns. The eyes, though, showed something entirely different, something unfamiliar. Missed open receivers, threw to the wrong guy. I just couldn't get Doug Baldwin out of my head as I was watching last night. And I know I've given Doug a lot of grief over the years for some of the challenges and the way he treated Russ and all of that, but I think these are the things Doug was always pointing out, right? That nobody holds Russ accountable and he makes mistakes and not so much the inaccuracies because that seems to be new, but some of the missed receivers, etc. I do wonder who holds Russ accountable. I do think there's a question there about whose job that is now. According to Pete, after the game, Russ held himself accountable and came to the team and said, I got to do better. And hopefully that's enough. But look, I think there's a real question there. I also feel bad for Russ right now. He's obviously hurt. He's on some sort of a weird hero suicide mission with this whole finger thing. He lost his most level-headed confidant when, unfortunately and tragically, Trevor Moad passed away. I get sympathy for him. I really do.
And it was his birthday yesterday.
I also think he made this bed by acting petulant in the offseason. And I think he wants to be something he isn't. I think that's too bad.
Right. It was his birthday yesterday. I heard that, Maura.
Yeah, it's too bad. Poor Roz. Tough to have that on you. Was he 33?
33.
Whatever. I agree with you about making his bed a little bit.
He made this bed. I feel bad for him, but he also made some of this bed.
Takeaways.
Yeah, when Bobby, Jamal, and Quandre play well, this defense plays well. Go figure. When those three guys who really represent the core of your defense play well, the whole defense plays pretty well, and you saw all three of them play a role in probably their biggest play of the night.
Second down and 9. Heinicke again with time. Throws down the seam. Logan Thomas ball is picked off by Adams. Picks it off downfield. He starts to run, but he had been tagged down, and so the Seahawks will take over the ball there as it's popped up in the air. Logan Thomas gets blasted by Diggs. Ball pops up. Adams makes the interception. His second interception on the season.
Yeah, he had a really good game. That's probably the best game we've seen this year from Jamal Adams, right? Bobby was, Bobby. There were some good moments and some tough moments, I thought, once again. right? You know, they love to point out Bobby's tackles, but a lot of them are like 8-10 yards down the field. And then Diggs, obviously, he's been their best player on defense. Throw Brooks in there because he had a really good game as well.
Couple great hits.
Yeah, and that's a big asset, right? That's somebody you've invested in as a first-round pick. You need those guys to play well. Of course you're not going to play well when they don't. But credit the defense. They went out there and did their thing and at least kept them in the game. Yeah, Pete mentioned that they're missing their kicker. And there were some other reasons why the defense, you know, got some breaks in that one. But they forced a turnover. They got the stop at the end, even though I thought that was a catch in the end zone. Upon rule, they said it was not. And they gave the offense one last shot, and they nearly were able to pull off a crazy upset. How nuts would that have been?
Takeaways.
All right, so speaking of Russ, how is it that Steve Levy knew it was a 4-to-8-week injury, but nobody at CBS did a couple of weeks ago?
Still on that one?
Yeah.
I think it's funny that you're stuck on that, because I don't think that 4 weeks is the normal time. I think they came out with what's the normal time, and then by the next day, the Seahawks were like, but he's going to try to come back in four.
Oh, yes. They said it was a 48-week
injury.
That's
how I took it.
They said it was a 48-week injury.
No, I felt like the initial time was a little bit longer, and then pretty much right away, Russ tried to come out with, no, but we're going to try to make it four.
I never heard anything other than 48
The
weeks.
Very first thing I heard was 6-to-8.
Yeah, that's what I heard first, too. And then they
somehow you and Jim Nance heard one thing and me and Steve Levy heard another, which was 4-to-8 weeks.
Well, because they did it really quick. It was like by the end of the game, they decided that he was going to try for four.
It doesn't make any sense. It's a 4-to-8-week injury. Russell came back in 4 weeks. Congratulations. You're not superhuman. You're just like everybody else. You work hard. You're tough. That's incredible. But it turns out that your bones aren't better than everybody else's. You're a normal human being who has some really amazing capabilities for pain tolerance and hard work. You're not a superhero. I can't believe you guys are buying into this garbage.
Takeaways.
Maybe Moore is getting a big head after her big commercial. I think that could be
what?
That. I said, maybe you're getting a big head after your commercial. I was thinking about it. Maybe people heard Moore yesterday. We were playing some Bone Thugs in Harmony. Justin, you have some of this?
Yeah, I got some.
We were playing some Bone Thugs because of the Crossroads. And Maura, who hates most of the music Justin and I have chosen to play on this show, nearly quitting over the idea of us playing more Cher just a couple of months ago, found herself just, I don't know, like you heard the Holy Spirit or something in Bone Thugs and started singing along.
It's really hard to hear, but so you got to listen close.
All right, listen
here. Maura, pull that music down just so
because
everybody
I
get
whispered.
A good shot at this. Ready?
Super weird.
Oh, my God.
All right, so you can hear more sort of the...
I purposely tried to whisper sing along.
Super weird.
You sound pretty good. Like, you can kind of sing. I think there's a singing voice in there. And so I was watching the game last night. This is an important takeaway. And I don't know whether you saw the commercial for the Oikos yogurt, but as the woman was basically in the same spot, she was sort of like...
foolish people
quietly doing karaoke.
My favorite is the guy in the background. Obviously, that's for the whole commercial. Sing about yogurt.
And then she busts it out.
Sing about yogurt.
Me think of you, Maura.
I didn't see this commercial, but that's funny.
It made me think of you. Like, you know, she starts
sing
off
yogurt.
More, maybe maybe we just need you to sing more about things that you're passionate about. I don't know if yogurt is that thing for you.
Sing about yogurt.
All right, that's my most important takeaway for the night. You want one more? Let's see if I can give you one more.
Takeaways.
Hey, Alex Collins. You know what you can't do?
Sing about yogurt!
No, you can't do that either. Don't do this.
Play fake. Russ scrambles, looks, dumps it off to Collins. Turns up field 40. Ball is slapped away. Does Swain get on it? No. The Washington football team gets on the ball as the ball was knocked away from Alex Collins after he made the reception. Turned up field. A flag is down, however. Let's check out the flag. As coming up with the football was Cole Holcomb. After it was slapped away from Collins.
He wasn't holding that ball very tight. That's not what you call ball
that's
security.
That's his first fumble of the year.
But that was not good ball security. Did you see Will Blackman's tweet last night on this? Former Seahawks defensive back. He says, man, ain't no way the ball came out that easy, LOL. That's how loose we carry it during turnover drills and practice.
Oh, man.
That's shot fire. That's
pretty too
funny.
Bad.
I like Will.
Sing about yogurt!
I think that's all I got. I don't want to do any more takeaways. I think I'm good. I think that's all I want to do.
Do you want to hear Maura singing again?
Yeah, I do. Let me hear
super.
I'm so mad at you guys.
What do you do for karaoke when given the opportunity? Have you ever done karaoke?
I'm normally too shy. My friends got me to do it once when we were on vacation in Mexico because I figured I wouldn't see any of those people again. I believe I did Shania Twain.
Oh. Yeah. I Feel Like a Woman?
I can't remember. Probably. Yeah.
I don't know that I would have guessed that.
It's a hit.
Yeah.
I know. I'm normally not. She's like pop enough because I'm normally not a country
person. I know.
Person.
Of all the things, you decide to go country even though you don't like country?
She's just easy to sing along with.
All right. Well, I think our goal, I mean, when Bob, when I used to host sometimes with Bob, because Bob can really sing. He was a singer in a rock band and obviously had, you know, he was a wedding singer for a long time. I mean, Bob can really sing.
Oh, nice. Okay.
It's one of his many talents.
Definitely.
Bob can legitimately sing. And every time he'd come in, I'd try to get him to sing. And, like, he'll sing, like, My Girl or something like that. He won't sing, like, you know, rock songs or anything because I think it's probably hard on his voice or, I don't know, maybe he's embarrassed. But he'll sing My Girl, and it's great. I mean, Bob can really sing. I'm so jealous. I would love to be able to sing. But now my new mission in life is to try to get Maura to sing on the air. More than just a whisper of Crossroads.
No one wants that.
I think more people will. I think you'll be surprised. We'll start a little revolution. There'll be people rioting in the streets, demanding that you sing.
Songbird our generation.
Yeah. Sing about yogurt.
Is Sing About Yogurt the new freebird?
Super weird.
Oh my God.
Put them together like that. It's you could be the next Oikos girl. How great would that be?
What? She was singing about chunks of fruit?
Yeah. Do you want to hear the rest of it? It's actually pretty funny. It's she's singing a regular song. It's the Chris Isaak song, right?
I didn't know. The only Chris Isaak song I know is Wicked Game. I don't know any other Chris
Isaak
songs.
Isn't that what that is?
Oh, is that what she's singing?
Yeah, that's the song.
Oh, gosh, she's
and
really
And I Want to Fall in Love, right?
Oh, okay, let me hear it again.
So somebody
Maybe
screams,
I missed it.
I cut the beginning of it off, but she's singing the actual song.
Okay.
Here you go.
Make foolish people do.
You're right.
Sing about yogurt.
Yogurt with chunks of fruit that I can chew. For gobble yogurt with fruit chunks and nice texture too.
The crowd's into it.
Don't want to use a spoon. Give me those fruit chunks that require a fork.
What a weird.
The crowd's just into it.
That is one of the strangest ideas for a commercial I've ever heard.
Somebody took the free bird and turned it into
Sing About Yogurt.
Play Free Bird. Seriously. Maura, lots of suggestions of things for you to sing, including Cher, obviously. Maybe Maura will sing us the 1-800 Cars for Kids ad.
Oh,
any
I
chance
do
you
that
would do that?
Guys.
Well, it's an option. Check vote for Maura singing. You sound good, Maura. So there's a lot of people here who would like to hear you sing. If you guys have other suggestions of what you would like to hear Maura sing to sometime, you can send it in.
I'm going to tell you I hate you again.
You can just text us to 206-421-3776.
I hate you.
That's the Megan Jack's text line. Just let us know. Salk, since you're Mr. Christmas, can you get Bob to do some Buble Christmas songs?
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll give it a shot. Did you know that Buble, speaking of which, and we'll get to Need to Know in a moment, did you know Buble did a version of Santa Baby?
Yes.
God, it's horrible. He says, like, Santa Buddy or something.
Yep.
What a god-awful version of that song.
Yeah, I do not like it at all.
Come on, Buble. You're better than that.
Santa Buddy.
Oh, God.
And hurry down the chimney tonight.
How did you find that so quickly? Please turn that off. My gosh. I think Warm's playing that right now, so it's a good thing you're here. We'll tell you what you need to know.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Texter says, I'd rather listen to Maura sing about yogurt for three straight hours than watch another Seahawks performance like last night.
Preach.
I don't know that anybody will blame you. That was brutal. Somehow the Seahawks managed a couple touchdowns in the game, but just didn't look like themselves. That was not an NFL offense, let alone one that features an elite franchise quarterback like Russell Wilson and some legitimate weaponry on the outside. That was awful. Seahawks lose 17-15 in Washington. Fall to just 3-8 on the year. They've lost three straight games, 6 out of 7. We have just not seen anything like that since Pete and Russ got together. The result was one thing, but honestly, the way things looked was even worse. We've seen them get dominated when a defensive line just suffocates them, right? The Rams have done that, the Packers, a few others. We've seen them hurt themselves where they just, you know, make penalties and substitution issues, etc. But we've never seen them just look so completely lost as they did yesterday. It looked like they had no answers. And this was different. It felt like much of it fell on both the coaching staff that couldn't design an offense and a quarterback who couldn't choose an open receiver when they were actually there, or then missed open, you know, missed them high and wide when they were open. That was just completely unlike what we expect from the Seahawks, from Russell Wilson, from Pete Carroll. Foundation shaking, but Pete Carroll after the game asked about the passing game, and he was pretty explicit.
Film doesn't lie, you know. We're missing some stuff. I don't see indications of that in practice as we're going, and so we just got to look at the film, you know. We can talk about all the different throws that didn't get where they're supposed to go, but I don't know what to make of it other than the fact we got to keep battling and keep trying to figure it out. I felt like we had some guys open tonight, you know, with some chances, and unfortunately we didn't hook it up.
Talked to Pete this morning at 6:30. He continued much of that theme. You'll hear that in its entirety coming up at 9:30 this morning. I don't think anybody knows for sure what we're watching and why it's turned so far south, but I'll say this. It doesn't look like the show we've watched for the last 10 years, and it's really hard for me to imagine that all of the major characters are going to be returning for another sequel.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Hello, Robbie Ray, and welcome to Seattle. The Cy Young Award winner last year in the American League is now a Seattle Mariner. They get their top pitching target signed up to a five-year deal worth $115 million. He does have an opt-out after 3 years, gets a no-trade clause for the first two seasons. He just turned 30, so this deal will cover him from ages 30 through 34. Likely to be pretty good years for a pitcher of his caliber. And by the way, what a caliber that is. Ray has been solid forever, but the last year really saw him improve after making some mechanical changes. They worked for him, led the league with 2.84 ERA. With 248 strikeouts, with a whip just over one, staggering numbers nearly across the board, and should make him the team's top starter, whether he gets the ball on opening day or not. Dan Plesac on MLB Network yesterday, he liked what it does for them.
This is a great move for the Mariners, who now I really think are a contender in the American League West. I really think they're a team that's going to make an impact.
That's a good question Brock asked me earlier, essentially, why weren't we talking more about him? I'd say I'm surprised. I didn't think their big major deals would go to a pitcher. My read on DePoto was that he would prefer to stay away from long-term free agency deals to older pitchers and instead trade for younger guys at that position. But you know what? You look at this one, 5 years is manageable. He's left-handed. Those guys tend to age better. And they got money to spend. So, yeah, this works for me. I don't think there's much not to like here. Ray's proven. He misses bats. He strikes people out. He's a legitimate frontline starter, which they needed. Not only does he give them what they need right now, but he provides a bridge as we wait to find out which of these minor league guys are legit. So, yeah, you're looking at a rotation with Ray, Marco Gonzalez, Logan Gilbert, Chris Flexen, and then a battle on for the final spot. George Kirby could get that. Matt Brash could be in contention. You got Justin Dunn. You got Margavichus. And then, of course, you're going to add in anybody else that you sign this offseason. I sure wouldn't mind to see a reunion with Tyler Anderson. Or you could go big. I would love to see them try to sign Marcus Stroman. Still, why not? Why not go after Stroman? You can never have enough pitching depth. You can never have enough frontline starters if you want to win. I don't think they're done, not even close. Payroll for next season, still well over $100 million. They've certainly been linked to bats. Chris Bryant, Trevor Story, both still unsigned. Maybe we see one of those deals get done today. It won't be Javi Baez, though. He signed a deal to go to Detroit.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Let's also welcome to Seattle Kalen DeBoer, officially the newest head coach at the University of Washington, signs a deal yesterday. Offensive-minded head coach, great success as the head coach at Fresno State. Specifically, he turned around the career of UW cast off Jake Haener. Before that, OC at Indiana, they had a lot of success with him there. And yeah, now he'll be charged with restoring respect on Montlake, and not to mention installing a modern offense that will entice Sam Heward and others to stick around and try to build a recruiting base that obviously has fallen on very hard times. We won't know whether or not this was the right move for a few years. He certainly has some impressive skills in the resume, but look, he's not Lincoln Riley, and there's much more risk involved with a young up-and-coming coach from this conference rather than going with somebody that is proven. And UW had an opportunity to show that, you know, they're one of the elite programs with an elite job, and I don't know that this hire proves that. Kraken get another road win yesterday, played really well. 7-4 win over Buffalo, two-goal night for Jared McCann and Mason Appleton. Tanev, Susie, Schwartz all pitch in as well. Two straight starts, two straight wins for Chris Drieger. They'll be in Detroit tomorrow. Only bad news from last night. Unfortunately, Jordan Eberle goes down with what is termed a lower body injury. He's their top scorer. I think third highest goal scorer in the league right now. So, yeah, be monitoring that one closely. That's everything you need to know. We do that quarter past every hour.
So all indications, lockout happens Wednesday.
Wednesday night. Tomorrow night at midnight.
Okay, so that means when can anything potentially resume? Does it have to have a deal before it resumes?
Yes.
And then, so what does that mean for spring training? What does that mean for every, I mean, how does the season start back up?
Doesn't.
Just until they get together and come up with something.
Yeah.
So it could be a week, it could be 2 months.
Yeah.
Could be a year.
Yeah.
Theoretically.
Could be forever. They may never have baseball again. I mean, like, once you're in labor unrest like that, I mean, there'll be deadlines along the way. As you'll hear this conversation, you'll hear the phrase over and over again, deadlines spur action, right? Deadlines force people to act. Their first deadline is tomorrow night at midnight, but, you know, the only thing, nothing gets canceled if you miss that. You just have essentially a pause on your off season. Really great idea, baseball, by the way. You've generated all kinds of buzz here in the last couple of days. People interested in where all these free agents are going. It honestly has felt like the beginning of NFL free agency, which captures everybody's attention. And then what? You're going to, after that, just go on a labor strike, or in this case, a lockout? Come on. My God, baseball. I love the sport. It's my favorite sport. They do so many things to get in their own way. And really, the system is so broken that you need to have a lockout. Meanwhile, everyone's agreeing to deals right now and everyone seems happy. Come on. Come on.
It's bad.
It is bad. I guess the argument is what? Well, yeah, some of these teams are able to make deals, but what about the poor Reds and what about the poor Pirates and they can't competitively compete? That's such garbage. It's such absolute garbage. If you want to do one thing in baseball and one thing only, just put a salary floor in the game. That's all you need to do. I don't think you need a salary cap in baseball. I know owners want it because they want to spend more money. They want to make more money for themselves. Oh, hunger strike.
Hunger strike.
Yeah.
That's the new strike.
Is it okay to talk about how Chris Cornell just like completely shows up Eddie Vedder in this song?
I love this song so much. Sorry, I'm just trying to just distract myself from all the bad. We finally get some positive news for Mariners, and it's like, oh, no, sorry. That's all going to stop Wednesday.
Yeah. Are we going to have spring training? I bet you it's delayed.
Ugh.
I bet you it's delayed. I bet you we get a brief spring training a couple weeks late. That's
no.
My guess. Just a guess. Dude, I don't know what's going to happen. I hope they figure this thing out. I do think you need some sort of a salary floor. I don't think you need a salary cap. But yeah, Cincinnati should have to spend enough money. Yes, Oakland should have to spend enough money to compete. Of course. It's ridiculous the way these teams don't bother to compete year after year and become farm systems for bigger clubs. And thankfully, the Mariners are not one of those teams that can't spend money. They can and have and will once again. So yeah, I want to address that. And I want to talk to some fans specifically that were freaking out. You want to start handing out L's? I got an L or two to hand out. I'll do it next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Were Mariners fans really thinking they weren't going to do anything? Was that like really a thing yesterday? Mariners fans panicked that because like four free agents had signed?
No.
The Mariners weren't going to do anything?
Just the same old Mariners people, which don't count.
Gosh. I mean, no, it wasn't fans in general, just a segment of the fan base. What'd you think? They were going to have like a $50 million payroll? Come on. Jerry has done what he said he would do, like really throughout the entirety of this rebuild. And while there are things to criticize in the history of the Mariners, right? The history of the Mariners is to be marginally cheap, maybe on the extra player, and to maybe make a lot of bad decisions, bad draft picks, et cetera. That's part of their history. But it's never to have a bottom tier payroll. It's one thing to have a narrative about a team, and maybe it's true, maybe not, but this one's just exaggerated. That's not even the right narrative. The Mariners are never going to do anything because they're too cheap to do so. That's not who they are. They had like the, what, 10th or 12th highest payroll in baseball a few years ago. They're not the Red Sox, Dodgers, Yankees, that's true, but they're not the A's or Rays either. Like, they're a
Pirates.
Team that spends. I don't really understand where all of that comes from. It just, to me, is not true. I love what they did yesterday. Robbie Ray is legit. $23 million, 5 years, that's a good deal for a 30-year-old. It's even better if he ends up opting out after three. This guy, you know what he does? He strikes you out. Like, what Robbie Ray will do is he will absolutely strike you. I got some numbers here. So he strikes out over the course of his career 11.2 batters per nine innings, okay? Meaning every nine innings, he's struck out more than 11 batters. His best season, it was a few years ago, he struck out 12.1 K per nine. Okay? So keep those numbers in your head. Understand that they are the best in the history of baseball among qualified pitchers. The best in the history of baseball. He has the most strike, the highest strikeout rate per nine innings.
And it's not a small sample size.
No. He's thrown over, what, 1,000 innings, right? I mean, that he is the best strikeout person in the history of baseball per nine innings. You want to comp, again, his career is 11.2. Roger Clemens, he seemed like a pretty good strikeout guy to you. Was an 8.6 strikeout per nine guy in his career. His best season was 10.4. So if you're thinking like, oh, well, he struck out a lot of guys and then it tailed off at the end, he had to change. No, his best season was 10.4. Randy Johnson, pretty good strikeout guy, right? Now, his best season was better, 13.4. But Randy, for his career, 10.6. That's pretty good. Randy's like top, what, five all time?
Six.
Pedro Martinez, pretty good strikeout guy. I know the Mariners know that as well as anybody. Pedro, 10 strikeouts per nine, 13.2 was his best season. I think that was 99. Nolan Ryan, pretty good strikeout guy. You like Nolan Ryan?
You did okay.
9.5.
Who doesn't like Nolan Ryan?
9.5 K per nine, 11.5 was his best season. So it's pretty crazy. I mean, you match Robbie Ray up against some of the all-time greats. It's not exactly the same. I mean, people are striking out left and right now. I mean, the game is just so different with the way it's being played. But what a great free agent signing in terms of his ability to go out there and strike you out. He won the Cy Young Award last year. Now, are the Mariners done? No, they're not done. I don't think they're done at all. Now, I don't know whether they're going to be able to get anything done before the lockout happens tomorrow night. I can't speak to the timing, but I don't think the Mariners are done. And every conversation I've had with people in and around that organization tells me they're not done. They know they need a bat. I think their first priority was to try to get Semien. Didn't work out. He gets 7 years. We heard Mark Feinsand report yesterday that they offered 5. Do you go 7 years? I would have. Yeah, I disagree with them on that. But I can't tell you they did it wrong. I just disagree. I would be willing to go there because I think you saved some money in the back. And I would just say, well, rather than looking at it as 7 years at, what was it, 25 a year or whatever, I would look at it as 5 years and then take the extra 50 and add them to the five, if that makes sense. Like yeah, I would just say, well, it's a 5 year.
And add that money to it. Yeah.
Whatever. Okay. So instead of paying them 25 a year, you really kind of look at it as like you're paying them 30 a year or 40, whatever the number is. Because I don't care. It's not my money. pretty easy.
To finish the Robbie Ray thing, Chris Sale's number two, by the way, on that list of the career strikeouts per nine. Yu Darvish, 3. Jacob DeGrom, number 4. Max Scherzer, 5.
Yeah, it's Robbie not a Ray's surprise. It's not a surprise that it's all of the guys that are fairly recent, just because of the amount that players strike out now.
8 years in the league.
You just don't have contact hitters. You got guys swinging for the fences. Yep. I think it's a good point. If Nolan Ryan or Roger Clemens or anybody else like that pitched in today's game of baseball, Randy Johnson would strike out, like, you know, 30 per nine.
Yeah, Randy Johnson's number 6 on this list.
Yeah. Can you imagine if he played in this era, how many strikeouts Randy Johnson would have? Yeah, it's ridiculous. So I'm not trying to say that he's a better pitcher than the career greats, trust me, but he's really good. And in this era, he's still the best at striking guys out. That's what you need. Starting pitching wins, man. Starting pitching wins World Series. Starting pitching gets you there. Now you need to go fix your lineup. You got to go replace the production you lost in Kyle Seager and actually make it better, improve it. Chris Bryant would be an improvement. Trevor Story would be an improvement. Matt Chapman would be an improvement. Okay? You need to go replace that power that you lost at third base, and there's 3 options, 2 of which are in the free agency market, and 1 of which is in the trade market that would help. So I think they're on that. But you think yesterday people thought the Mariners were like didn't want to play? Now what, you're worried that they don't want another guy for their lineup? Of course they do. I think they're going to get one. I don't know who it's going to be. I don't know whether it's going to be one of those top 2 free agent names, meaning Bryant and Story. But I think they understand that they've got to improve the lineup. They didn't let Kyle Seager go for fun. They think they can do better than that. They think they can get somebody who can have a similar amount of power, similar defense, but with a higher on-base percentage. And that's essentially what Chris Bryant is.
I know that we have Frazier now. And we've obviously have Toro. We have guys like Dylan Moore. Does that push out the idea of bringing Chris Taylor back because he's too similar to those players?
You know what he has that those players don't have? He's good.
Yeah.
Like, those players play, but Chris Taylor's good.
Well, okay. But
so, yes, he pushes them out.
So you would still go after Chris Taylor having those guys on your lineup right now?
I'm going to be very clear. Dylan Moore, and who else did you say?
Well, I'm saying now we have Frazier, Toro, and Moore. They're all kind of close to that. Like,
well, Dylan Moore is not going to prevent me from doing whatever I want. Dylan Moore can go to AAA, could get cut, and your team will not be significantly
affected. I hear you on that.
Dylan Moore is a jag, just a guy. Came up with a couple big moments. He's got a little pop. I mean, like, he's got some potential, but he's like any number of other guys in baseball. He doesn't prevent you from going out and signing somebody that you want. If you want Chris Taylor, and you think you can play some center field, play some second base, play some third base, etc., go get him. If that's the guy you've identified, I've not been as interested in Taylor as some of those other names. I know, and I should keep mentioning, because obviously he's shown up in all the Morosi reports. They obviously have some interest in him. Maybe I'm just biased because of what he did when he was here the last time. I never buy into Chris Taylor, even though I should. He's a good player. Significantly better than the players you just mentioned. I would prefer to see them go after Chris Bryant or Trevor Story, but Chris Taylor may be just as good as those guys, and I'm just being stubborn. Like, I fully recognize that I've been kind of stubborn on that one, and
I love Chris Taylor.
Do you?
I love Chris Taylor.
Why?
I don't know. I really don't. That's the same way of you not wanting robot umpires, not knowing why. I don't know. It's just something about I love Chris Taylor.
I like the way the way it is. But Chris Taylor, I guess I'm just bitter.
He goes about his business. I don't know. There's something about him that he's the kind of guy that flies in under radar, plays it the right way, isn't the flashy dude, and just produces.
I think it would have been nice if he had done some of that for the Mariners while he was here.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
And it just, it still kind of irks me to this day.
It's so weird to me, though. Like, there's a bunch of Mariners fans that are sad to see him, like, doing so well and thinking we could have had him, but you have the view of, like, well, you didn't do while you were here, so now I don't ever want you again.
Yeah, I don't like him. It makes me angry that he's gone. I don't respond with sadness to anything.
Some guys are slow to develop. Like, J.P. Crawford didn't develop with the Reds.
Yeah, but that's not his case. His case is that he changed his swing after he left. He was doing one thing while he was here, then he changed his swing somewhere else and got better. But it wasn't the coaching of the Dodgers. It was something he did with his own swing coach. He made a decision to go get good instead of being bad while he was here. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Oh my God.
He's like, he was sandbagging here because he wanted out?
No, it's a lot better, man. I'm being unfair to Chris Taylor. I know that. I fully recognize that I'm being kind of stupid on this one. I really do. So if it's Chris Taylor and he ends up being your third baseman and you end up rotating Frazier and Taylor and Toro and all, yeah, that works. But I don't know whether does Chris Taylor replace Kyle Seager's production? Maybe he does. Maybe there is enough power in there now these days. It just, when I see his body type and all of it, it still seems kind of hard for me to imagine. We'll ask the professor what's going on with these Seahawks because it is ugly. We'll talk some more baseball, of course, over the course of this week. I really am pumped, and I think there's a lot more to come. Let's get to the professor, talk some football next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton's Morning Drive, every morning at 8:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
I thought you saw a lot of good things out of offense. I think that was a very positive sign.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Brought to you by Dubin Law Group.
It just amazes me. I give it credence, but not total credence.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Mike Salk.
Good morning, John.
Mike, not a good morning for Seahawks fans, that's
no,
for sure.
That was pretty ugly last night. What'd you think?
Oh, that was awful. Season's over. I mean, it's like 3-8 right now. I don't see any chance now that they can bounce back and make the playoffs. I mean, they can maybe salvage some things down the stretch with some of the easy games that they have. But that thing was really ugly, and it just keeps getting worse. I mean, think about the idea. Here's a Seahawk team that's the lowest in the league as far as offensive plays. 55 a game. They had 47 last night. They had 5 3-and-outs and 5 consecutive 3-and-outs in one stretch. I mean, until that last drive, I think they only had like 1 or 2 first downs in the second half of the game. I mean, it was really, really bad.
So what happens next?
Just play it out. That's all you do. I mean, they take on San Francisco, see if they can at least, get some kind of a win there because, at least that Fred Warner and Debo Samuel aren't going to be able to play because of injuries. And Debo Samuel is, a bad matchup for any team trying to stop him because he's so good and he's having such a great year, but he's going to be out for 2 weeks. And now it's a matter that, Russell was, throwing the ball a little bit better, but again, he went through another bad stretch where he couldn't get anything done.
Yeah, I mean, he was inaccurate yesterday. Yeah. Again, like we're not used to seeing. There were obviously mistakes made in his decision-making. Pete Carroll said that last night. And then, you know, we talked to him this morning at 6:30. We'll play this whole thing at 9:30 as we normally do. But, you know, I asked him about Shane Waldron, John, and this was his answer.
We, like I said, we were open, you know. We got open on plays. And so we were there available. And that means that the call, the scheme, the prep, all that stuff, guys were where they needed to get, and we needed to just find our way to convert. I don't know that we drop any balls tonight. I don't remember, you know, not catching a football, you know, and we didn't get any balls knocked down, over at the line of scrimmage. So there's we just need to come through and convert, and everybody needs to contribute to that.
Sure, sounds like he's putting a lot of the blame on Russell.
Yeah, sounds like it because. He said that Russell's got to do better. We've got to do better. But, Russell right now is the offense. And even though he had that great drive at the end, almost for 90 yards plus yards to get the touchdown, you know, he threw another pick.
What do you think is going on with Russ?
I just think that right now that finger still is messing him up and he's not in sync right now. And, you know, you can see that, he's moving around okay. He still has the ability to throw some good passes, but you know he's not syncing up at all with DK Metcalf. I mean, you saw at least two or three plays with Metcalf where he's on the left side and he just simply overthrew him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's able to work it out with Tyler Lockett. Lockett had a good game. Certainly Gerald Everett had a good game. And then the other problem is there's absolutely and totally no running game.
Yeah, and Pete says that a lot of that has to do with the running backs, but it's not like there's any sort of holes there. I mean, we've seen teams around this league bring in practice squad guys and have all kinds of success running.
Mm-hmm.
They got some major problems on the offensive line, John.
They do, yeah. You knew that going in with Damian Lewis not being able to play. He was inactive. You know, Jamarco Jones was inactive. He wasn't able to play. And so now they're taking Kyle Fuller, the backup center, who started the season at center, putting him at guard.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a struggle. And so you throw all that together. And, you know, naturally, say what you want about the Washington football team. You know, they've lost their best two defensive ends, but they're real good at defensive tackle, and they couldn't control the tackles whatsoever.
No, they couldn't. And it's funny, as bad as the offense has been, the defense really has come to life.
Yeah.
I mean, they've played exceptionally well. Jamal Adams, I thought, had his best game yesterday.
Yeah, and again, it's like the only problem is the defense stays on the field too much, and they wear down by the fourth quarter. I mean, we've now watched that now for about a month, and it's understandable. You know, because, I mean, you got guys like, you know, Bobby Wagner and Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs. I mean, they're out there the whole time not taking any plays off. And, you know, it all caught up to them. But still, I mean, they held the Washington football team to 17 points, which was actually pretty good.
Yeah, it was pretty. I mean, I got to give them some credit for that they played well. They gave their offense one more shot even at the very end of the game. If you were in charge of this thing, John, what would you fix first?
I think right now you got to fix the offense, and certainly you got to put a big emphasis on the offensive line. Then you got to do something at the running back position, say what you want, they were down to basically two running backs, two running backs in a practice squad.
Well, we've been saying the offensive line needs to be fixed here for like 6-7 years,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, like, you know, how long does it take to fix the offensive line?
Well, I mean, they've made some moves, but then injuries.
But they haven't worked.
Well, I mean, some of them have worked.
The offensive line's not good. It's still not good. It hasn't been good now for years.
Yeah, but I mean, what do you think of Gabe Jackson?
I don't think he's good.
Well, I disagree.
Well, I'm watching the offensive line, and it's not good.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole line right now isn't good. But again, you know, they made a move on Gabe Jackson. You know, Brandon Shell, he's fought some injuries. You know, Dwayne Brown, you know, certainly he's kind of a shell of what he used to be.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to do better. And so, you know, it's still, but as a group right now, the offensive line is not doing well.
So do you think that it is personnel with the offensive line, the way they're coached? I mean, what do you think
it
is?
It can't be the way they're coached. Mike Solari is one of the best in football.
Okay.
So it's like anything else. It's execution. Just like the same thing was said about the defense. It's like, hey.
Well, but I don't buy execution. Like, either you don't have the right players or you're not coaching them the right way. Right? Execution means you don't have the right players.
Mm-hmm.
They're not good at executing, right?
Well, I mean, again, it's like you can put them out there, but if they're not, I mean, go for example with the Washington football team at the beginning of the season. Here they had four number one defensive linemen, right? And they were playing terrible. And that what was happening was that, you know, they were more looking at their individual stats than they were playing as a group. Now, eventually, before the injuries, they started to play a little bit more as a group. But is that coaching?
Yes, that's coaching. That's coaches getting them to buy into a system where they don't, you know, all aren't as concerned for their individual stats. Yeah, that's coaching. 100%.
But you still have to put something on the players too. They're the ones not executing.
Well, but if you're not, but then isn't that because you don't have the right players or you're not coaching them the right way?
Well,
I mean, like to me, I'm never going to put blame on players in general when I'm looking at what's wrong with the situation.
Yeah.
Either they're not the right players because you chose the groceries wrong, or they're not being coached appropriately, and that's the coach's fault.
I still put some blame on the players. I mean, let's put it this way. If you're putting blame, as you are, as everybody is, on Russell Wilson, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, why do you have to ignore the offensive line and say that they're immune from criticism because they're players?
Well, I don't think anyone is immune from criticism necessarily. But when you're looking to try to fix it, you need to either get different players or coach them differently. You can't just like stare at the players and hope that they're just going to all of a sudden get better.
Well, but also, how are you going to be able to get all the different players, because again, it's not as easy as you think, particularly in a year like this where the cap was 182.5, down 8%.
No, but it does point out, John, some of the missed draft picks that you've had, some of the issues that you've had, not you personally, obviously, but that the team has had with their free agent signings. I mean, why isn't their offensive line great? Well, they haven't drafted that many offensive linemen.
Yeah.
The ones that they have drafted have not turned out to be particularly good.
Damian Lewis
has been good.
Yeah.
I totally agree. Before that, I mean, Ethan Posick has never been particularly good. That hasn't lived up to a second-round billing.
Mm-hmm.
Jamarco Jones, Phil Haynes, there's a few others in there that haven't really amounted to much of anything at all.
Right.
You point at the free agencies and Luke Jokel and Brandon Schell and what was that gigantic guy they got from Oakland? My God, that guy was huge, like the biggest human I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even think of his name anymore. But, they haven't worked largely.
No, but that's a league-wide thing right now. I mean, look at all the moves in free agency in the past year and how so many of them league-wide have not worked out.
Mm-hmm. It's a good conversation, John. We're going to have to continue it tomorrow. We'll talk at 8:45, okay?
Sounds good.
Good stuff. John Clayton, every morning at 8:45, fun to argue a little bit with the professor. And he makes good points, but I look at it and say, either you don't have enough talent or you're not being coached right, or maybe it's a little combination of all of it. I got to tell you, I'm almost sick of this debate. The who do you point the finger at? Let me tell you, four things are happening all at the same time with the Seahawks right now, and they're all kind of leading together to one big tangled stew of a mess. I'll tell you about it next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.